Hey, comic book fans and trekkers everywhere. This is Nana Visitor. I was Alan Dolan in The Spirit and Major Kira Nerys in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and you are listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, promoters of pop culture. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. I'm continuing my year-long celebration of 50 years of Star Trek right here on Comic Book Central. Right now, you've got the second of back-to-back Star Trek Deep Space Nine episodes. Great show. Last week, my guest was René Auberjonois. He played Odo on the series. This week, René's co-star Nana Visitor, who played Kira Nerys. She's going to be joining me. She was also in the television movie The Spirit. That's the superhero created by legendary cartoonist Will Eisner. That movie starred Sam Jones as The Spirit. By the way, I talked about that film with Sam back on episode 59 of Comic Book Central. So if you haven't heard that conversation, you're going to want to go back and check that out after today's show. I'm going to be talking about that film today. And of course, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I'm going to be chatting about both those things with Nana Visitor. She's going to be along in just a few minutes. Few quick notes before we get started here. I mentioned two of my previous guests, Sam Jones from Flash Gordon and The Spirit, and René Auberjonois, my guest from last week from Deep Space Nine. Now, both of those amazingly talented actors, they're going to be appearing at Terrificon at the Mohegan Sun Convention Center in Uncasville, Connecticut, August 19th through the 21st. My good buddy Mitch Halleck, he is the organizer for that event. I've been there a few times. I've recorded some awesome conversations for Comic Book Central. You can go back and check those out. Ran some Q&As, put those on the show. A bunch of guests are already lined up for this year's event, including both Sam and René. Here is a little bit more information about that event.
Hey, you say you want Comic-Con fun and a place to have it? Well, look no further than the Mohegan Sun this August 19th to the 21st. That's right, the Terrific Comic-Con. Terrific-Con is hitting the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. You'll see actors from your favorite shows like The Walking Dead, Arrow, Comic Book Men, and Star Trek. Plus, there'll be some fun on Saturday night when Kevin Smith, Silent Bob himself, joins the fun at the Mohegan Sun. There'll be comics, cosplay, and a whole lot more. Plus, don't forget, meet your favorite comic book artists and writers at Terrific-Con. There'll be Dan Slott, Mark Bagley, Paul Levitz, Neil Adams, Keith Giffen, and more than 50 of your favorite comic book artists and writers from Marvel and DC. That's Terrific-Con, Connecticut's Terrific Comic-Con this August 19th to the 21st. Tickets on sale right now. For more information, visit us at terrificcon.com. It's Terrific!
I'm going to be attending Terrificon again this August. I hope to see you there. Now, one other note. Mitch and I also contribute segments to another podcast you should be checking out. It's the IndieCast at theindiecast.com. The IndieCast is the world's number one Indiana Jones podcast. And this coming week, the very next episode, you're going to hear my conversation with actor Anthony Ingruber. Now, Anthony has become somewhat of an internet sensation with his spot-on impressions of Harrison Ford. If you've seen his YouTube videos, they are incredible. He does Last Crusade. He does scenes. Man, it's just he does the Joker. He does all kinds of different things. So he even got a chance to appear in a film featuring Harrison Ford. It's called The Age of Adeline. He played, of course, the younger version of Harrison's character. If you haven't seen that film yet, be sure to check it out. So we talk a little bit about that film. We talk about Anthony's meeting with Harrison Ford. That was pretty cool. And of course, the future of the Indiana Jones franchise. It's an interview you're going to want to check out at the IndieCast this week.
Tune in each fortnight to the IndieCast, the world's number one Indiana Jones fan podcast.
Trust me.
Featuring the latest news, reviews, and interviews with on-screen and behind-the-scenes talent who help bring to life the greatest adventure movie series ever made. Each episode has the latest from the world of Indiana Jones, as well as interactive segments, trivia, contests, and specials, including radio dramas and music retrospectives. the IndieCast.
It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
Available in iTunes or listen directly at theindiecast.com.
If adventure has a name, it must be the IndieCast.
And of course, while you're online, be sure to head to my website. It's comicbookcentral.net. Check out any of the episodes of Comic Book Central you might have missed. Star Trek fans, if you're tuning in for today, these Deep Space Nine episodes, there are a bunch of episodes you're going to love. Already this year, as I mentioned, René Auberjonois, that was last week. Original series executive producer Herb Solo, he was on episode 109. Some great stories about the original series. Next Generation's Brent Spiner, episode 116. That was a fun one. Of course, you can also check out my classic conversations with William Shatner, Jonathan Frakes, Marina Sirtis, and from Deep Space Nine, Chase Masterson, Michael Dorn, Terry Farrell. They've all been here. So they're all out there on the website, comicbookcentral.net. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or catch up with the show on Blueberry and Stitcher if you're not on iTunes. If you are subscribing in iTunes, that's the best way to get all these different episodes. Please leave a review in iTunes when you're there. That's always appreciated. That helps get it recognized through the different reviews, and when people leave that, so you click the stars, leave a quick review. It just takes about a minute, but that really does serve to get the show recognized on a higher level. So always appreciate when you do that. Be sure to like the show on Facebook. It's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Follow it on Twitter at comicbookctrl. Each and every week, the episodes post Saturday, so you can retweet those. You can share them on Facebook. Really appreciate it when you do that. Again, just another way you can help out to get the show out to even more individuals. So when you see it posted, just click retweet, just click share, leave a review on iTunes. Much appreciated. And also appreciated, just like on last week's show, my thanks to the Deep Space Nine fan club on Facebook. They emailed some questions to me. Of course, it's joe@comicbookcentral.net. That's the email address. I'm mixing those questions into these two interviews. Last week you heard some. This week you're going to hear a few more. So big thanks to those Trekkers. Be sure to check them out on Facebook. Very cool club over there, the Deep Space Nine fan club on Facebook. Big show today. Let's get to it. Check this out, and then I'm going to be right back to talk with the versatile woman who sings, dances, acts, she does everything. Nana Visitor. Now, the rhythm was always going to get Nana Visitor. Born in New York City to Broadway choreographer Robert Tucker and ballet instructor Nanette Charisse, Nana was raised in New York City's theater district. Even famed dancer Sid Charisse married into the family, so a lot of dancing going on. It was no surprise that dance was one of Nana's passions early on, and she went on to appear in numerous stage productions. In the 80s, she moved to L.A. and found steady work in television guest spots. Remington Steele, Knight Rider, Scarecrow Mrs. King, MacGyver, and of course a memorably wacky episode of Night Court. That's a fun one there. Those shows and more all filled the resume. But one project in particular scored Nana some big geek cred. She appeared as Ellen Dolan in a television movie adaptation of cartoonist Will Eisner's The Spirit, starring Flash Gordon himself, Sam Jones. Now, the character of Ellen Dolan was created by Eisner in 1940, and the television movie, which was written by 48 Hours and diehard screenwriter Stephen D'Souza, that movie really brought the comic book to life. Primary colors, two-fisted action adventure, death traps, and incredible comedy and chemistry between the two leads. Man, it's all there. Unfortunately, executive-level chaos at ABC at the time of production effectively killed any shot the project had at making it a series, but it did ultimately air on the network, and it finally found a home on DVD from Warner Archive. But one project did make it to series. In fact, it had a sci-fi pedigree like no other. In 1993, the latest series in the Star Trek universe premiered, Deep Space Nine. This was a darker, grittier Trek, as evidenced by Nana's character, Kira Nerys. Raised in a labor camp, she became a member of the Bajoran resistance to the Cardassian occupation of Bajor. And during the run of the series, the character of Kira experienced an incredible amount of growth. Executive officer of Deep Space Nine, surrogate mother, and along with my guest from last week, René Auberjonois, Nana helped craft one of the greatest love stories in Trek history. In the bittersweet finale, the two said a sentimental sci-fi goodbye that still resonates with fans over a decade and a half later.
Nerys, please, tell everyone I'll miss them.
Even Quark.
Even Quark. But most of all,
I know.
Now, joining me today is a star of stage and screen. She fought alongside the Spirit. She spent 7 seasons on board the space station Deep Space Nine, and she is the second guest on Comic Book Central to have an asteroid named after her. Here to help me celebrate 50 years of Star Trek is Nana Visitor. Nana, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here.
I'm going to say this. That's some pretty serious Trekker fan interaction right there, having an asteroid named after Have you ever met the Discoverer?
Who's the first person?
You just reunited with her.
Carrie Farrell?
Yes. Your Star Trek DC.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, look, okay. the three have had on. We just spoke last week with Rene Auberginois. First of all, have you ever met the guy that discovered the asteroid, Bill Young?
No, I haven't. Isn't that amazing?
That would be pretty cool.
Met him.
Yeah.
It would be very cool.
Apparently, he loves himself some Deep Space Nine.
I meet some of the most interesting people. I met the guy who landed that thing on Mars, and he showed me how he did it. And
the Mars rover?
And he was in line to get my autograph. And I'm like, please sit down and give me yours.
Yes. You did TV space stuff. He's doing, real life space stuff. Oh, that's amazing.
I know. It's a little backwards, isn't it?
Well, but Star Trek, we've heard these stories over and over and over again, how Star Trek inspires young people to get into these careers, to do these things. So it's almost like, life imitating art, art imitating life. Where does the genesis of all this begin? So we are part of that. You've been a part of
Absolutely.
This for quite a while. We mentioned that reunion there. You got to reunite just recently with Rene Auberginois, Terry Farrell, and Zachary Quinto was there as well. You were there for the Nimoy documentary?
Yes, was really fascinating. So many things that I didn't know about Leonard Nimoy and the development of his character as well as his life. But, I didn't know he came up with that cool hand gesture.
Mm-hmm.
Did you? You probably did. You guys know all that stuff, but I certainly didn't.
We kind of watch a lot of this and read. Yeah, so some of that stuff we know. But I'm looking forward to it because I'm sure there's a lot about the man himself probably that is going to get uncovered. So that'd be interesting too. You got to meet Zachary Quinto, who was there. I don't know if that was the first time you met, but did he mention that there might be a spot on the new Enterprise for the three of you? Did you get
No, we okay. didn't. We didn't get, we could have tied him down in the green room there and just, beat it out of him. But mostly we just did small talk and you do when you just first get to meet somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, maybe like a cameo in full prosthetic makeup. Maybe or who knows?
Wouldn't
I mean, it's
nice?
The same timeline.
Wouldn't that be good?
It's the same timeline, so
you
the characters could pop in.
No.
Okay. All right. Well,
that's the great thing about Star Trek. You just never know which way they're going to go with it all. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about Star Trek. Look, a lot of reunions, too. Ted 2, you were in the movie Ted 2. You're with your buddy Seth MacFarlane.
Yes, I have a scene with the bear.
Okay.
It's fun. It's fun to see how low tech it is. I thought, I don't know. I don't know what I thought, getting the bear in and out of seats and stuff. I thought maybe he'd be motorized, it's a big picture. But no, there's this burly guy who, is bent down, crouching, holding the bear, making him walk,
Yeah.
Like a little doll. But it was fun. And whatever Seth calls me up to do, I'll do. That's what it comes down to.
We talked to Sam Jones. He said there was a surprise for him at the table read. He wasn't expecting you there.
Well, what I couldn't believe is after all these years, he goes, nah. I couldn't believe it, Not everybody has such a long memory. And he's just the same. My God, he's just great.
Did you know Sam was going to be there at the table read?
No, it was a shock. It was a shock to me, too. Such a happy shock.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that project that you worked on with him, but I mentioned Star of Stage and Screen. Theater, it's kind of in your DNA, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. My mother was kind of a fabled dance teacher here in New York, and my father was a choreographer on Broadway. And my uncle Nico, a famous dance teacher out west, and he trained and eventually married this 15-year-old girl who became Sid Charisse. So dance is heavy, heavy, heavy in the family. And my grandmother had a troupe of 11 children that she taught to dance, and they were headliners in the vaudeville circuits all over the world, known as the Charisse Troupe.
I thought this was interesting, too, because you're, like, most parents try to discourage their family, their kids from getting into show business. You kind of, like, this was reverse engineered with your family, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There was, it would have been a shock to my mother if I didn't go into show business. To her, there was a nobility and a creativity, and it's like, it's the only thing to be in, which I loved about her. And frankly, she was right. It is the way my DNA spins, and it's my tribe.
Stage roles early on, was that what sort of drew you into the business? I mean, was it, what were some of those early roles and things that got you into the business?
I was definitely an outsider. I was in my schooling here in New York City. I went to Nightingale Bamford School for Girls, which was in the day, still is a real white glove girls school. And here I was, this, you know, daughter of dancers. My mother's best friend was Doris Duke, the tobacco heiress. And Doris decided to send me to school as a present to my mother. So here I was. I was definitely not amongst my people and struggled desperately for years until they did a musical and I starred in it. And then I just started I couldn't do enough stage for the school. I did all kinds of things to raise money and charity work. And it got me into Princeton, which I deferred to for 4 years and then just never ended up going. But it certainly was a taste of being Keira Norris on Deep Space Nine. Everybody else was, you know, in the right uniform, and I wasn't.
That's true. Well, yeah, you were kind of the outsider. And well, I think that played into your character, too. I think that played into the tone.
Oh, it totally did.
Yeah. Now, before we get into Star Trek,
we definitely
want to celebrate Star Trek 50th with you. But one of the projects, one of your earlier projects that I definitely want to talk about, we talked about this with Sam Jones, The Spirit. TV movie was to serve as a pilot. It didn't get picked up, but for reasons we'll talk about here. But how did you first find out about the project, The Spirit? Did you audition? Did they seek you out for this role of Ellen Dolan?
Back in the day, I was going on, and now I just can't believe it. I was going out on 4 or 5 auditions a day. I would bring changes of clothing in my car and change as I went to the next one. And I worked it's unheard of now, but I worked as a guest star and made a living. I didn't have another job. I just hopped from job to job, one pilot, maybe 2 a year. Sometimes they went, sometimes they didn't, but just kept going like that. So it was another call, just like Star Trek. It was another audition that came by the pike, and I was excited because of Steve D'Souza, and that was a big name and a talented one, and that, you know, gave the whole project weight. Plus, it was such a delightful script. I loved it. And, you know, I really don't think, I think 2 things happened why it didn't go into a series. I think one was politics, which you probably know. And the other was it just wasn't quite the right timing. I think now if it happened today, it would fit right into the spectrum of TV we now have.
They'd be looking for something like, well, and it hit so close to the tone, I think, of the comic book, or at least even the look of it. You know, it did. Yeah. We talked about that with Sam.
It was Will Eisner come to life, I think. I mean, in his blue suit, it was like, oh, my God. He had a jaw. It looked like someone drew it.
Yes. Were you familiar with him from Flash Gordon? Had you seen the movie Flash Gordon?
Yes, I was familiar with him, and it was like, wow, this is going to be fun. And it was. He's one of the sweetest, as I'm sure you know, he's one of the sweetest human beings I've ever met and hasn't changed an iota from, you know, the Hollywood machinery, which often changes people in not great ways, but hasn't happened to him.
And there's such chemistry between the two of you. It's a shame this didn't get picked up as a pilot because they're, well, I mean, talk about finding the tone too, because it's almost like, you know, it's the comedy, but then it's like a straightforward action piece. But how, in approaching the role of Ellen Dolan, how did you try to find that chemistry or that comedy, those comedic beats for those scenes? Because there's some really amazing comedic scenes in this.
Well, the two things. First of all, the chemistry is, for an actor, it's really just paying attention to who you're working with, paying close attention. And so the chemistry with Sam was easy. You know, here was this handsome, great guy, not Hart. That part was taken care of. And the tone of it was really set by Steve D'Souza and our director. They chose a tone, the light feel of it, and that's what we went. That's what we all went with.
Did you? Sam had mentioned that Will Eisner showed up on the set one day. Did you get a chance to meet him or talk to him at all?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, no, I didn't. That would have been something.
Yeah, I was wondering if you, like, what research you did for the role, or was it just because you mentioned you're doing so many auditions, or is it just like, just plow through this thing and. You know, like,
no, it wasn't plowed through, but, when you go in, the most important thing to get right is the tone. If you can't get that tone that they're looking for, you know, the rest is useless. But once I got the tone and I, of course, read the comic book, it was pretty much laid out.
Okay, so you did get a chance to read the comic or look into it a little bit.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yeah.
Okay. Did they have, like, comic books there, or did you do the whole, like, I'm going to go to the local comic store?
I went to the comic store.
Yes.
I went and bought it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I know you shot this thing in, like, a little over 2 weeks. So I just didn't know how much time you had to prepare for it.
Not a lot.
Okay.
Not a lot. That's just the way things were.
How did you see the character?
It was, especially in the 80s, a very typical light romantic, flirtatious, will they, won't they kind of heroine, really. Although I don't know if we were doing it today, I would do it any differently, because it's really true to what that comic book felt like to me.
Yeah, it really is a comic book come to life. It's fun to watch. I'm glad they released it on DVD finally. There's an actual a DVD out there. It almost didn't get aired, I think, because wasn't there like a write-in petition and all these things to say, and it was like,
you know,
a year later.
I didn't know about the petition, and I had no idea about all that stuff. But it happens all the time.
Yeah.
There's a whole regime change at the network, and the people who ordered the pilot, you know, are gone.
Yeah.
And the new people don't want to have anything to do with what the old people, you know, they don't, it's like kryptonite. They don't want to touch it. So that happens all the time, and great things get lost that way.
Well,
it kind of sort of happened to another show that I was on, Dark Angel. After the first season, there was, you know, a change at the top, and they took the whole show a different way, and kind of crashed and burned second season, unfortunately.
Yeah, I remember my wife and I really loved that show, and to go in, and yeah, you talk about tone changes and things. So yeah, I mean, that's Hollywood, I guess. But one franchise. That had already had a write-in campaign save it, is celebrating 50 years this year, Star Trek. Let's
Isn't
talk a little
incredible?
Bit about
yeah.
That's yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I think I've even seen an interview where you talked about the fact that this is like the one of the constants in your life, where that you can always come back to Star Trek.
Oh, it most certainly is. It's defining, And that's one of the things that my manager at the time worried about, that it would be defining. But to me, I was so lucky to play this entity, Major Kira, that I don't mind. Plus, it's such a cool club to be in. There's such interesting people. And I've got, you know, I can go to any part in the world and I'll find club members and I can hang with them. And it's kind of amazing.
That's a great way to put it. I don't know if I've ever heard one of the actors put it that way before. But yeah, that is one of the coolest clubs to be in. Were you a Trekker on any level before getting the role? Had you, like, watched any of the series? Did you, you know, like, obviously Next Generation was huge at that point coming into it.
But I was working a lot of stage, and the problem is, you know, I certainly didn't know how, I don't know where we were with DVDs or any of that, but even if there was, I would have been horrible at trying to figure it out. So I never really got to see The Next Generation. I did later. But the original series was on Channel 11 in New York City. I was a chorus girl in New York, and I would fix myself dinner, watch the show. I think it was on 6:30, and then go do my show. So it was a routine and a habit and deeply ingrained in me. And I didn't know which one I had more of a crush on. But definitely both of them. I loved the show.
I was going to ask which one, Kirk or Spock, but you know, you played diplomat here, so that's fine. You picked them
down
both.
Down the middle. I have to say but it's true. Down the middle.
Okay, I have listener questions from the fans over at the Deep Space Nine Fan Club on Facebook. I'm going to mix those in here and there as we talk a little bit about Star
Great.
Trek. But I have a question. Like, first of all, about Star Trek. Now, you, on a personal level, you have two sons, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Would it be safe to say that the births of both of your sons played a big part in your history with the character of Kira? Interesting timing on both of them.
Well, Buster was 3 months old when I started the show. And, you know, it was, when I think of it now, we did 26 shows a season, and our shortest day was 16 hours. So it was grueling. It was an incredibly grueling show. And add to that, having an infant and raising a child. And then by the time Buster was four, Alexander Siddig and I had Django. And being pregnant and doing a minimum of 16 hours a day and having a four-year-old is insanity. It was insanity. But, you know, to this day, it's this one of the most wonderful 7 years of my life. And when Django was, I think, 4 years old, we were in New York, and someone said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "Star Trek Los Angeles." And that was the truth. They both grew up on the lot of Paramount.
Wow. That was the surrounding too. Well, did you recall, like, when you became pregnant? I think it was the end of season four or close to somewhere in that time period. Do you recall the conversations you had with producers as to, were there any concerns? Like, because that's always a tough thing for an actress, you know, because Kira can't, like, carry loads of laundry around all the time, like, they are pillows.
Well, I thought that there was a good chance that I would be fired. Mm-hmm. I really thought that could happen, and it was happening on television, that actresses would be let go if they got pregnant and it wasn't right for their character. So I was like, well, you know, I did it. Let's see what happens. And that they wrote it so brilliantly that I was carrying Keiko's child because we were in a shuttlecraft accident, mm-hmm. Was amazing. That was just such great. And by the way, it was kind of a funny joke for me because the shuttlecraft saved me. Every year when we would renegotiate, now we're supposed to have 6-year contracts, no renegotiations, but no one ever listened to that. Everyone renegotiated, and it's just the way it works in Hollywood. And, you know, my agents would try to renegotiate, And Paramount would say, look, there'll be a shuttlecraft accident. She's gone. Now, where do you want to negotiate? So it was funny. It was like, oh, God, the shuttlecraft accident. It was something that was always hanging over our heads, or my head for sure.
Yeah.
And that it saved me was a sweet irony as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, that's it's an amazing storyline that you go through, too. I've got a listener question here talking about coming into Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Titus Muller, he wants to ask, what did you look at as being the overall theme or the themes of Deep Space Nine, and which theme was most important to you personally?
Well, it's interesting. Now that it's on Netflix, there are, and I go to the conventions, there are 15-year-olds coming up and saying how much they love the show and what it means to them. And I think the themes of the show that we did so many years ago is still relevant. It's still us trying to get along on an enclosed space, and what it takes, and having the best intentions, but being fallible entities. And I think one of the main themes was life isn't black and white. It's many shades of gray. And certainly that was the theme of my character. She had done horrible things. She'd had horrible things done to her. I believe that she, I think that she was, she had PTSD at the beginning of the show, and eventually heals from that over the course of 7 years. But her reactivity, the way she could barely respond to other people but reacted, is, you know, we didn't have a name for it back in the day, but now all the work they've done with soldiers, it's pretty obvious that that's what was going on with her.
Okay, it's interesting you bring that up, too, because there was another fan question. This one was from Robert Clemens. And it's interesting to tie it in with a comment that you made.
Robert! I love Robert. Yes, go ahead.
There's an interesting comment tying in with something you've said, too. So he wanted to know how you were affected by the 9/11, the attacks on 9/11, because you were in Broadway, I think in Chicago at the time, when the attacks took place.
Yes.
Okay, so, but then I saw an interesting comment you made in an interview for StarTrek.com that you said, they asked if you wanted to ask the fans questions, and your question was, how do you think Kira would have changed post 9/11, even on the show, how that would have impacted. So you talk about her character having PTSD. It's just interesting. Well, first of all, how were you affected by that? Did that affect how you approached the business or anything like that? And how do you think the character would be on if the show were to take place now?
Well, first of all, I always had a funny feeling that what I did as a career was slightly silly, especially being on stage. And that was a very youthful outlook. I realized that during 9/11. When Giuliani called us back to perform, to be in Times Square. The thing people, I think, maybe don't realize if they weren't here is that we didn't know when it was going to end. We were looking up in the sky for more planes for weeks and weeks and weeks and months. And Times Square was always talked about as you know, something that they would love to blow up. So when he called us back, just, you know, I think it was 2 days after, the boys always came to work with me. They were always backstage. I didn't know how, I was used to it from Paramount, and it made sense to me to do it on Broadway. I had a big dressing room, and I'd bring their toys, and yes, sometimes it was very odd to see Buster and Django playing pickup sticks with a chorus girl who was wearing, you know, black lace underwear. But they didn't see it that way. They just knew that was Jen, or, you know, that was one of their best friends who came in and played with them. But when I went back, I went, okay, the boys aren't coming. And I went, oh, why aren't the boys coming? Because I think that we might get hit. and I might not make it, but I'm going into work. And it resonated finally for me that this is what we do. We help people stand back up. We go, no, life goes on. Even Broadway shows and being able to go to a restaurant, all those things, we're back. We're all back. Come on, stand up with us. And that's a pretty important role. So it changed my perspective of what I do and how seriously I take it.
How do you think the show Deep Space Nine or even the character Kira would have changed if the show had been on a few more years or if it would be done now, just sort of in this post 9/11?
I don't know. That's why I ask people, what do you think? I mean, you can call me a freedom fighter. I was a terrorist. I was an ex-terrorist. I'm not sure. Maybe because I was an ex-terrorist, I could be, you know, the second on the call sheet. But I don't know.
That'd be interesting. Well, let's talk about some of these standout episodes that you have. In the time that we have left, I know season one I thought was a very interesting episode, Duet. Now, is this what they call one of those bottle episodes where you're getting late in the season and the budgets, like you don't have as much money in the budget, so we're not going to be blowing up anything?
And it wasn't so late in the season. It was because they blew everything on the pilot, and it was like, okay, so we're not going to do a lot of overtime. We're just going to use two characters, and it was all about the writing.
It's almost like a
and
stage
the writing,
play.
Yes, and the writing was brilliant. I thought it was falling apart. I thought it wasn't working. I thought, oh God, oh well, you know, what are you going to do? I didn't quite feel like I had a handle on what was happening. But it's interesting. For actors, most often when they don't feel like they have a really good handle on it, it's some of the best work they can do because they're not just kind of, you know, chewing on it. It's just slightly out of reach. And I just thought Harris Yulin did an amazing job, and it was just, but to me, it was all about the writing, and it's my very favorite episode, and it was...
Oh, of the entire run? Of the entire 7 years?
Of the entire 7 years.
Wow.
And to me, it's what Star Trek does best. Mm. You don't even need all the special effects, just real stuff happening between two people.
It's interesting to me because you watch an episode like this and you think the early critics of Star Trek Deep Space Nine were always like, well, it's not Gene Roddenberry's vision of, you know, all these things. And it certainly broke the mold. It went away from the template. But I think when you see an episode like this in Star Trek, I think that vision of Roddenberry was to address social issues in a sci-fi subtext. And I think Deep Space Nine did that better than anything.
I agree. But I think it was also annoying for people that it was serialized, that you needed to see the episode before. Now that's not an issue, you know, thank God, or I wouldn't get involved with all the television shows I watch. If you couldn't just, you know, go to Netflix and watch one after the other, which I know people are doing again with Deep Space Nine. I was at a convention this weekend and it's like, I'm going through it for the fourth time. It's like, oh my gosh. But you know, I have to say, I've watched it and it does stand up. It really stands up.
Another episode, great episode, season two, Crossover. We love these mirror episodes of Star Trek. You mentioned that you were a fan of the original series. Had you seen that initial mirror episode? Were you familiar with it when you got the script for Crossover?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What was your first thought when you got this? Like, oh, we're doing a mirror episode.
I have to say, the first time I beamed in and out, it was epic for me. The first time I got to sit in the captain's chair in the Defiant, it was, I can still see Rene Aubergenois standing over me as I'm sitting there going, you know, Nana, none of this is real. You're not really captaining us. Do you understand that? And I'd be like, no, I don't.
Buzzkill.
And beaming in and out is, you know, you just stand there and then they turn the camera off and you walk off and they've got all these things that are just technical things. It was thrilling to me. Yeah. Absolutely thrilling. So to do a crossover episode was, I mean, it was wonderful. And it was so much fun. It was like being given a chance to, you know, play hooky and play something totally different. It was great. The only thing that was awful was the wonderful costume. And that was, you know, that was like an iconic costume. But it was full on rubber, hot, showed when I sweat, and squeaked. So it had its issues.
A lot of looping the dialogue and fixing things
complete.
In post.
Anytime I had to move in the thing, it all everything had to be looped. I really would try not to move in it, but it was inevitable that it would happen.
Kind of takes away from the drama of being the intendant when you're just walking around squeaking.
Exactly.
Listener Keith Romano wants to know which part you enjoyed more, Kira or Mirror Kira?
They were equal. I have to say, I know it would be expected that Mirror Kira was more fun, but Kira was so alive to me. And Mirror Kira was someone I always walked a fine line with. I didn't want her to become ridiculous, but I was playing a full-blown narcissist. So I didn't want her to get so that she lost her edge of danger. So I was careful playing her. With Kira, I felt like I was on a wide open field. I could just run like a cheetah, you know, nothing got in my way playing Kira.
Yeah, it's one of the most memorable roles in all of Star Trek. Another memorable episode, season 6, His Way. Okay, here's where a lot of things change. Your initial thoughts when you found out that Kira and Odo were becoming romantically involved. There were some episodes leading up to this, but certainly this was a huge change in story arc.
Yeah, I was disappointed.
You and Renee fought it initially,
actually,
right?
Yeah, we did, because I so loved the idea that men and women could be true, deep friends and not have it be a moonlighting, if you remember that show with Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis, not have it be, you know, this, oh, we're just friends and, oh, now it's something more. But I have to say, I don't feel like it was a device. And what I heard is that the writers took it from watching the show. They went, oh, he's in love with her, and took what they saw developing between our characters and decided to develop it. So it was more of a natural thing and less of a device. And ultimately, I loved it. I just asked, please don't let them end up together, because for these people that were, they had spurs and difficulties and faults and real traits of beings, you know, that struggle with life occasionally. I didn't think that their ending up together in the finale would have been right, and I'm glad they didn't.
You kind of answered a question that listener Michael Ray wanted to know. He wanted to know if you think Kira and Odo ever saw each other again after the finale.
Yeah.
We know they met in New York for the premiere of Leonard Nimoy's documentary.
Well, yes. They... My husband Matthew and I see a lot of Renee and his wife Judith. We get together whenever we can. We were in Ireland together last summer, I think it was. Fall,
So Kira and Odo vacation together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And whenever they're in New York, we get together. So it's a real friendship.
There's the relationship that we get there. In that episode, His Way, you got to sing. Your Broadway DNA getting to come back. And you mentioned the relationship with Doris Duke. How did that play into the episode? Because I think that's pretty cool.
Well, actually, it's it's a song that I remember her singing. We would go to her mansion in Somerville, where she had it. It was such a cool house. I understand they're tearing it down now, but there was a long, it was like a city block long hallway, and off of it, at the end of it, was this massive, magnificent pool, indoor pool, and on the side was like a little New York nightclub room. There was a stage with seats, kind of a formal stage, with a piano, and Doris would perform for us. And that was, Fever is one of the songs that she would sing. So as a little girl, that was like in my memories.
That's a great, it's a great moment in a fantastic episode. So many different episodes we love, but well, we can binge watch them, like you mentioned. It's on Netflix now. We can binge watch and appreciate the series. I think maybe, I don't know how many people appreciate it back in its day, but I think many are appreciating it now. What are you working on now? How can fans find out what you're up to? What projects do you have going on, and how can we find out more?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter, at Nana Visitor, and I am in New York City now, and what I am concentrating on is I'm in classes for doing plays, and I've written a play. And I'm doing play readings, and this is live theater again is the world that I'm working in, although I don't say that I won't pop up in TV again. I love TV work. I love it over film work. I love how fast it is. It's fast and down and dirty, and I find that really thrilling and exciting. So, I imagine I'll pop up in TV, but I'll let people know as it happens on Twitter.
Well, one of the listeners, Rhiannon Cooper, wanted to know, would you be open to reprise your role as Kira in the new Star Trek series if they said, hey, how about an episode or two?
With the people that are involved, yes. Absolutely.
Good writers.
Yep. Yep. That's all that counts. That's all that matters to me. That would be the only thing that mattered. My hell would be to be, you know, like, I don't know, DS9, the Thanksgiving reunion, or, you know, Christmas time with
the holiday
with
special.
That would be just the worst. But I'll put it out there again. You know what I think Star Trek Deep Space Nine is most suited for? An opera. I think it would make a hell of an opera.
Oh, wow. Okay, I wouldn't have even thought of that, but that would, well, we see all these other TV shows and movies becoming stage productions. Spider-Man, they've had Spider-Man on Broadway. Why not?
Yeah, but I'm not saying Broadway, I'm saying full-on opera.
Okay.
Go to Lincoln Center and see it. Opera. I think it would be, you know, with all the themes in there and all the, oh my God.
Have you ever pitched that?
No, I haven't. But I keep saying it here and there, hoping, I don't know, that
get J.J. Abrams on this.
Writes operas. One of your listeners is going to write a damn opera. That's what I'm hoping for.
There you go. That's what you're putting out to the listeners. So, hey, Nana.
That's right.
So glad I got a chance to catch up with you for Star Trek's 50th. A continued success. Hopefully we can see you at some Star Trek appearances this year. If you've got any coming up for the 50th.
I hope so.
Okay.
I do. Yes, I do. And I'll definitely be in Las Vegas.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, we'll find out about that on Twitter as you're coming up. It's at Nana Visitor. Continued success. Thank you so much for joining me today on Comic Book Central.
It was a huge pleasure. Thanks so much.
See there, Deep Space Nine fans? Kira and Odo do see each other all the time. Just not in character. It's nice to know they still get together. My thanks to Nana Visitor for visiting the lair this week. Of course, my thanks also to Rene Auberginois for stopping by last week. So much fun revisiting the series with both of these amazing talents. And I'm having a lot of fun binge-watching Deep Space Nine on Netflix. I highly recommend it. Go check it out. Every episode is there. This is the way the series was meant to be seen. It's a lot of fun. Keep up with Nana on Twitter. You can follow her at Nana Visitor. Also, the Deep Space Nine Fan Club on Facebook. Big thanks to everyone over there for some great questions. I'm going to put those links in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. go check out the archive there. There's an episode guide on the Facebook page in the About section. Go back and check that out. Stream your favorite episodes at the website, including a bunch of Star Trek-themed episodes, as I've mentioned already. Subscribe and download them on iTunes, Blueberry and Stitcher if you're not using that. Folks, if you are there in iTunes, as I mentioned earlier, please take a moment. Leave a review if you like what you're hearing. It doesn't cost a thing. If you like the show, if you like what you're hearing, that helps get the word out. That helps me out. So would really appreciate it if you could take just a minute to do that. And big thanks to all those who have done that. Like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at ComicBookCTRL. Posting some really cool stuff out there. I just posted something with Renee from Match Game, or a reference to Renee from Match Game. I put that out there on Twitter too, so you can check that out. When the new episodes post on Saturday, you can share them with everyone. This one here, my goodness, the one you're listening to. Share the lair. Just click retweet. Click share on Facebook. Easy peasy. You're getting these cool conversations each and every week. And honestly, how cool was Nana, huh? That was a cool conversation. Share that with your family and friends. Hashtag share the lair. Keep it going. Be sure to drop me a line, too. I want to hear what's on your mind. Joe at comicbookcentral.net. I want to know your favorite comic book themed movies, television shows, live action shows, actors, voiceover artists, directors. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know what you think of Deep Space Nine. Maybe you're catching up on Netflix. Let me know about that. You send a message to the lair, I'll read it on the air. Simple as that. All right, folks, I am out of time for today. I will say this. I've got a few things cooking here at the lair, so some different things going on you're going to want to pay attention to. Now, I talked about the television movie The Spirit today, working on a little surprise for that. Might even bring on the Bayou for that particular episode I'm developing, so that's in the works right now. That might be on May 21st. Stay tuned to the Facebook and Twitter feeds. You'll know when I know. I'll post it there. What I do know is that next week on Comic Book Central, and when I say next week, I mean in just a few days. You are days away from this. It is a bonus episode of Comic Book Central. It's coming your way. It is a Comic Book Central first, and it is a Comic Book Central exclusive. It's the reunion 40 years in the making. Billy Batson and Captain Marvel working together for the first time since the last episode of the Shazam television series went off the air back in 1976. Actors Michael Gray and John Davey, they're going to be joining me. Now, they've been on Comic Book Central before separately. This time, we're all going to be sitting down together with our sugary breakfast cereal. And a first for this show, we are going to do a Comic Book Central commentary on a classic episode of Shazam. That's right. You heard me right. A Shazam commentary you are not going to hear anywhere else. A bonus episode, the exclusive Comic Book Central Shazam commentary with stars Michael Gray and John Davey. That drops Thursday, May 19th. You do not want to miss it. And of course, May 21st, the next regularly scheduled episode of Comic Book Central. Watch the Facebook and Twitter feeds for that. Come back for both of those. Until then, go get the Shazam DVD box set if you don't already have it. We're going to be talking about that. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's so hard to bear. You give me fever.
Remind you of anyone?
When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night.